So I'll let Mr. Berger have the chair. He wanted to sit over there. I said, well, let's us big shots sit up here. So that's why we're here. And I told those two gentlemen there not to fight. We'll run them out.
Okay.
Folks, Mr. Berger will... Louder? Oh, Russell, why don't you turn around and sit with Mel? You'll be a little closer. You're doing all right? Are you hearing me now?
I'm hearing you, yes.
All right, well, then don't say any more. you said, all right. For Violet, I'm going to speak louder. And you don't have to worry about Mr. Berger. He has something to speak into here. Don't be afraid to say whatever you have on your in your mind when he gives us the go-ahead to speak. So, Mr. Berger, you have the floor.
Well, thank you, Judge Booth. And once again, as I said at the beginning of the meal, I want to thank you on behalf of our little group for inviting us, and it's such a pleasure to be here with you. What I would like to do, if it's all right with you, is just have you talk a little bit about the history of Metlakatla, but especially about the land claims back in 1971, when land claims were settled by act of Congress for Alaska Natives. The people here decided to stay with their reservation and not to form a corporation, not to go into the land claims. And as I told you, my commission has been established to review the land claims, and that's why we've been holding meetings all over Alaska, not just Southeast Alaska, but all over Alaska, to hear what Alaska Natives have to say about the land claims, what they think of it, how it worked out, the good points, the bad points. And as I told you, everywhere we've been in Southeast Alaska, people have said, well, go down to Metlakatla and see what they think, because they stayed out of land claims, and we think everybody else thinks you made the right choice. I don't know whether you did or not, but that's what they're all saying. I think you know that they face the possibility that in 1991, their corporations could be taken over by outsiders. So if their native corporations are taken over by outsiders, then they will lose their land. And that really is what is worrying them about 1991. So if we could do that, that would certainly help me. What we're going to do, Jeff Berliner, he is going to just, as each of you speaks, he'll just go around to where you are, and with the microphone, so you won't have to get up and come forward. And if each of you would just give your name at the microphone, that would be helpful. And Mary Kenswick will probably come around quietly and make sure she gets the spelling right. And if you don't mind, Judge, my wife is the photographer for our commission, and she would like to just to take a few pictures while we're proceeding this afternoon, and let's see how much money she's got. She won't tell me. So if we could do that, I wonder, Judge Booth, if you wouldn't mind by saying something yourself about you're the judge of the tribal council and the tribal historian, and we're maybe you could begin. Would you mind doing that?
Yes. I think I have to stand and say my piece. I can speak louder when I'm standing a little bit. I'll touch on maybe one phase of the land claims that I feel has worked against us as a people. I was involved considerably because of this one fear that we would lose certain rights as a people. This was a little hard to predict because the law is so many faceted. But I think our fears were well founded because we have lost certain rights as a people because others received money for their rights. I used to, well, at least one year, I was involved with fishing up in Bristol Bay because as a native citizen, I had the right to go anywhere in Alaska and fish or earn money. And so was it true for all the people here, Mr. Hayward and Mr. Guthrie went to False Pass with their large seine boats and they fished out there. They fished elsewhere in Alaska and they weren't deprived as natives of the state. Today, this is not true. We can only fish certain areas, and now it's gotten to where I couldn't even fish a boat. Mr. Smith, if he wanted to, he was a former captain of a boat, and he fished all over the Southern District of Alaska. If he wanted to go fishing now, he'd have to buy a license because he doesn't have a license. And years back, we were all men of legal age were given permits by the Bureau of Indian Affairs to be able to fish anywhere in Alaska and to hunt and fish. Today we couldn't do that because these rights seemingly went with the land claims. The state assumes that all these rights were lost because of the Land Claims Act. We felt that if we were going to lose these rights, at least we should have received some monies. We were satisfied with the land. We were satisfied with the boundary, although we were entitled to twice as much land. You're aware of this. We were entitled to twice as much land as we now have. If we had gone along with the land claims, we would not only have had Ned Island, we would probably have had Gravina Island, Duke Island, and all these little islands out to the south of us because of the number of people that lived here. But we were satisfied, the council was satisfied with what we had because we had the water rights. So now, today, like some people believe, maybe we are better off. That that is something that you cannot really say, because we're businessmen. If we had all these other areas, we might have found many things to do with it, because we have a background of 100 years of business involvement. We are the oldest people in the canned salmon industry anywhere in continuous operation. Our people started canning fish in Canada long before they moved here. You're aware of the history. I know you studied Simpson history to some extent with the Nisqa people. So I feel that we should not be deprived from the rights that we had always had, even though we have the local rights, because we gave up a great deal of land and monies to have what we have, to maintain what we have. So I feel that we should not have lost our right to fish anywhere or hunt anywhere in Alaska. We should not have lost those rights. And as far as the Tsimshians living outside of the island, they were told that when they applied for land, and they numbered some 600 people in Ketchikan alone, and they had been living there for ages, the history of the Tsimshian goes way back in this area, goes way back to the flood area, the flood period. Now, when was that? I don't know, but I know it's thousands of years ago. When the flood waters receded, Tsimshians found themselves on, what's that mountain behind Ketchikan?
Deer Mountain.
And they can, and we have that in our stories. Boaz said, now I don't know of an authority beyond Boaz, but he says that after the flood, now this is what he was told by many informers, the Tsimshians settled in what is now Ketchikan. So our history goes back. Now, when the land was divided between Russia and England, this was in the 1820s. England had a man representing the crown. His name slips me right now, but I'll remember. And he worked for almost 3 years negotiating with the Russians in trying to establish the boundary. The boundary that Bagot, Sir Henry Bagot, was after was land that covered the Tsimshian domain. But because he fought for almost 3 years for this area, that's up, crosses by Wrangell, and it goes south up above Ketchikan, up above Loring, and it goes west
southwest, and and that goes out north of Forester Island. Now, Forester Island, if you ask the people, say, in Port Simpson, who owns Forester Island, aboriginally speaking, they'll tell you, we did not let anybody set foot on Forester Island. That was our domain. That was our island. That's where we received foods in the wintertime. When all else was, other places were hard to traverse, there was always sea lions and seals and the likes out there. So whenever the weather was good, we went out there and we got all these things. And that put us through the winter. Now, these things I didn't make up. I mean, this is what I was told. I've done a lot of research. And so our domain then was this area. The Russians won out when the border was finally established, because Cape Muzan, Cape Shacken, and the mouth of Portland Canal is on a straight line. Then Portland Canal extends into the interior for another 100 miles. It's a natural border. So because of that, we lost our domain. I say we lost our domain because after the border was established, England and Russia said, you cannot go back and forth any longer. This is now one country and that is another. So they divided Tsimshian domain in half. So then our people, by that time, they were acquainted with the musket, and they weren't afraid of the musket. But when the American forces had a battery of cannons through, what's that little pass? Tongass Pass?
Edwards Pass.
Edwards Pass, yeah. It's right on the border. And they were trained on anyone that would pass that area. Then our people stopped going back and forth. And those that remained became known as Gilksanisk, which evolved into Gilanids. That means those Tsimshians living on the northern portion of their domain, who did not move to the south, but yet who could not go back and forth across the border, the established border. And the phrase is, those, the rest of us, whom we can only look back across at. That's what this Gilksanisk means. It's to look back across and see the rest of you. It doesn't mean Tlingit. Tlingit is Tlingit. The Tsimshians pronounce Tlingit in three different ways. The Nass say Tlingit. The upper Skeena people say Tlingit. And the people on the coast, that's us, we say Tlingit. But they all three mean the Tlingit people. So that was a mistaken idea that we were foreigners in this area. Aboriginally speaking, this is our domain. We moved back. We merely returned when the Duncan force with his forces moved back here. they knew of this place, and but yet they had been absent for generations. But the reason they chose this place was because of their canoes. They all came. I'll show you pictures on the Duncan Cottage. Why this was the place they wanted. They came in canoes. So this is just to start the speaking portion of your program. But if I can answer any questions, you can touch me anywhere and I'll answer like that.
Well, thanks, Judge Burton. Booth, sorry, forgive mm-hmm. me, forgive mm-hmm. me.
You can call me anything.
Well, thank you, Judge Booth. I hope I know we're going to be able to spend some time with you in the rest of the day. And I should say, for the record, we're holding the meeting here at the Seniors Center in New Metlakatla, and we have a lot of seniors here and a lot of other people from the town. And I hope any one of you now will feel free to speak.
Can we ask questions, sir?
Certainly.
You mentioned that you traveled the area up here in Alaska, and you did mention something about the Canadian Eskimos that are involved in the land camp. Is that correct?
Well, I've been appointed to do this job by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an international organization of Eskimos from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. And I've also been appointed to do it by the World Council of Indigenous People, which is an international organization of Indians from North and South America, and it represents Indigenous people in other countries as well. But my job is to hold these meetings, listen to people like yourselves, and then write a report based on what you say, and that report will be made public in the summer of 1985. And I'll be sending copies to all the places I've been and to the people who testified. And I hope that report will be of use to Alaska Natives to plan what they're going to do about their shares, their corporations, their claims to self-government that they say have not been taken away by the land claim settlement. And in other countries, Native people and their governments are looking to Alaska because they're starting to settle claims in the other countries, settle the Indian claims, and they want to know what happened here in Alaska. They want to know how ANCSA, the land claim settlement here, worked out. So I think my report will be of interest to all of these people.
Before, I just want to say one more thing. Speaking with your good wife while we're eating, I know that you had talked or heard reports from the Tsimshians and Ketchikan, and I was leading up to that, but I got sidetracked and I got a one direction mind. The Tsimshians living outside of the island were told that if they wanted to become involved in the land claims, to move back to Metlakatla. Now, this doesn't make sense, because why didn't they tell the people in Angoon to move to Cake or to move to Klawak? To get involved in the land claims, or to move from Klawak to Cake. That's where they lived. That was their community. And aboriginally speaking, Ketchikan is a Tsimshian community. So, and there are close to 600 of them over there. And they could have had a good land settlement if it had been handled right. Another thing that happened, the Clinkets and the Haidas had had a court settlement for their claims in southeastern Alaska to the extent of $7.5 million. You're aware of that. And when the land claims law was first promulgated, they were excluded. The Haidas and the Clinkets were excluded in the first wording of the land claims bill because Congress said they had had a prior settlement. But they used that money. They hadn't received it yet, but they went and borrowed $500,000 from the Yakima Indians on the strength of the $7.5 million. And they used that money to lobby in Washington, and which we didn't. We didn't really lobby at all. I was about the only one. Mr. Guthrie came with me once. We tried to lobby for something better than what we were promised. And I just wanted to throw that in, that the Tsimshians outside of the island should have been treated better.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Mr. Patterson. Judge, I'd like to... I sat in the same meeting with distinguished elders here in the community that were on the council then. I believe Solomon Guthrie, you were mayor at the time, and Russell Hayward, you were the secretary, and Mr. Smith and Mr. Hayward there, and Mr. Leask here was a treasurer. Certain facts were presented to the council that led to their decision. I think these should be recorded. First of all, the council has always been aware of the reservation status that it had received through the proclamation that was given. And they're also aware of the Allotment Act in the state of Washington, whereby the government did primarily the same thing they're doing here in 1991, giving title to the land. And they're aware of the consequences that happened in the state of Alaska, state of Washington, where reservations were broken up by natives and non-natives to the point where they were nicknamed the checkerboard reservations. And these things were things that the council had heavy on their mind. Also, the fact that the government came to the meeting and offered them 23,000 acres per township. And we were entitled to three townships, which was 69,000 acres. We would have lost 17,000 acres, which didn't seem like much, but it would have lost our identity. One of the legal identifications of Annette Island that make it able to become a reservation is the fact that it has definite boundaries. It's an island, and the waterways, as outlined in the proclamation, identified as a reservation, similar to the ones in the lower 48 that have surveyed longitude and latitude lines. And the council was aware that in order to follow this 23,000 acre amount that was given to them, they would lose that, and they would lose their identity as a reservation, and they wanted to protect that. They didn't want the government to relinquish its trust responsibility to the tribe. And the government was ready to do this by telling the council that once you are on the lands claim, you would no longer receive benefits from the IHS, which is your Indian Health Service, EDA, your Economic Development, your OEO, your Office of Economic Opportunity, your PHS, your Public Health, BIA, Bureau of Indian Affairs, all of those initials that meant a lot to the tribe. We were told we would lose these things. And these were the type of factors, plus one of the things that Mr. Booth mentioned too was another thing that the council had to take into consideration. They could not settle for the Tsimshian Nation, and that's what the government was asking them to do. I mean, we are here as part of a Tsimshian Nation, not the Tsimshian Nation. And the government was trying to have the council settle for them. And all of these things were on the council's mind when they made that very hard decision to not join the lands claim. And the council was criticized by a lot of people at that time, and I really really commend them for their strong action at that time, because I do believe that it's paying off in the long run. But those are the facts that they were presented with, and those were the things that they made their decision on. And we've always said we're playing a waiting game. We're not through with it yet. We haven't received our benefits, but we're not about to sell our rights as natives either. So we're just biding our time, and the time will be right, and at that time we feel that the inequities will be solved. Those are the facts that I sat in the meeting on. I'd like to have you record these as such.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. You're a councillor today. Were you on the council then?
I'm a consultant working for the council, and I was aware of all the figures that they were going through.
You're on the council today?
On the council today, yes.
Thank you.
Judge Berger, Your Honor, Honorable Mrs. Berger and your staff people, I'd like to make a couple of comments on my overview of what has taken place over the past years. I served on the City Council at that time. I was one of the opponents of the Land Claim Settlement Act. I fought very hard to encourage the community not to participate in a Land Claim Settlement Act because of a number of things that I was afraid of at that time. One of the first things that scared me was that at first we were going to be entitled to only one tract of land in addition to what we have today, and that's 23,000. We were told that
what do you have today? What is
we have 87,500 acres, I believe, on Annette Island, plus the water rights of 3,000 feet, or 86,000. We were told that we would be entitled to 23,000 acres. We were also told that the act as it's written will not be changed. We sent for Senator Gravel, and we met with him at the town hall here, and we asked him questions. One of the questions I asked him was that, Senator, if we chose to participate, what happens to our reservation status and our fishing rights? He distinctly said, the first thing you have to give up is your fish traps and your rights to your fisheries around your island. And that was very scary at that time. There are a number of other things that we were concerned about, as Councilman Patterson had mentioned, that we are concerned about losing certain and specific rights. We spent a tremendous amount of money on attorney fees following this Land Claim Settlement Act. The community invested quite a bit of money. We are still investing a lot of money in attorney fees following it. The inequities of the act has really taken its toll on Annette Island's reserve. The reason I say this is that we have to be alert all the time. There always seems to be amendments to the act that would have an effect on us and our people. Anytime they amend the act, it has to affect us. Certain rights that they will be giving up and are willing to give up can affect us. What happens there, Your Honor, is that we could very easily get drawn into that stream of settlements by other people and receive absolutely nothing and be hurt. So we have to be careful. We always have to be on our toes, and we try to keep our attorneys involved, and the council tries to keep abreast of the changes that are being made. Possibly, I would have supported participating in the act had we knew that they would have been willing to change the language in the act and amend it as many times as they have done so. Nevertheless, we chose not to participate as a community. The members of the community who were living on Annette Islands Reserve and also outside of Annette Islands Reserve and in other areas and other cities in the lower 48 were allowed to participate if they wished. The council did not deny those people their right to participate. They had a choice. And one of the things that they were told was that if you participate, you cannot retain your right as a member of the Metlakatla Indian community. You cannot straddle the fence. You cannot receive benefits from both sides. You cannot straddle the fence. You either remain as a member of the community or you give up your rights as a member of the community and participate. Well, I believe that now looking at some of the results of the settlement, I still strongly believe that we made the right decision at that time. Inasmuch as we possibly would have handled our share of the settlement much different than the other corporations have handled theirs. As Mr. Booth indicated, that we have a number of business-minded and well-educated people in our community. I'm not saying that we're better than any other tribe, but I think that basically we had the knowledge and the experience, business experience in our background that we might have been able to manage our share of that settlement if we chose to participate much better. So I think that in 1991 that there probably will be specific things that will come out in 1991. I truly believe that all of the recipients of the Land Claim Settlement Act are not fully aware and familiar with the act. There is some fine print in that act that possibly could hurt them more in 1991. Especially the fact that I believe that in 1991 that the shares will be available to anyone in this country. I don't see a way that they're going to be able to stop that. I think that when I want to look at the side of the recipients of the Land Claim Settlement Act, I feel for them very much. One of the things that the Land Claim Settlement Act did to the Indian people was divide them. A terrible division has come up out of the Land Claim Settlement Act. We as a Tsimshian tribe have learned to live with that division. The split amongst the Haidas and the Tlingits and the Tsimshians is not good. There is a terrible animosity, and I would say that I believe it's not on the part of the Tsimshian people who did not participate. We have learned to live with the animosity that has come out of the Settlement Act. I feel sorry for the participants of the Land Claim Settlement Act because a shareholder really has received no benefits to speak of. Only a handful of people, executives and board members of different corporations, as I've seen it and I've tried to follow this as closely as I can, have reaped the benefits of the act. High paying jobs, $70,000 and $80,000 a year, open accounts on travel. There are no direct payments to the recipients. I have to commend Kasan. I believe the only corporation that probably has done what I believe our community may have done. They've made direct payments to their shareholders, as much as $25,000. But give that individual the right to say, this is my $25,000, I'm going to buy a house, or I'm going to buy a boat, I'm going to invest it in a business. They got an opportunity. The rest of them haven't. On my way down here to the meeting today, I stopped and talked to one of our community members. We got talking about this meeting. He asked me where I was going, so I told him. And we got talking about the corporation that he's working for, Angoon. And he feels very bad. He tells me he feels very bad about that corporation because the reason he said that was I discussed with him the shortcomings that the corporations have as far as getting direct benefits to the shareholders. He said, you know, Casey, out of all of the people working out there, out on Prince of Wales, in this logging operation, from logging, from truck driving, from the cookhouses, from the office workers, the whole works. He says, I believe there is only one shareholder involved in that whole operation. And that's what basically is happening all over. You know, they're being misled by a number of people. They make hasty decisions and hire high-cost legal advisors, legal business people. They're spending a tremendous amount of money. You look at the 14th region is what has happened to the corporation in Seattle. You find out that way back in Minneapolis, a banker is involved. You know, you find these advisors telling these corporations and board members, buy up this company. It's a defunct company. You know, buy it up. You can make money. Buy the cement company. Not one of the large companies they have bought have amounted to anything. They've been failures. You look today that Sea Alaska is pushing now in the Seattle area to recall some 60% or 70% of its board members that had just recently elected. The animosity now is not only between the three tribes, the Tlingits and the Haida and the Tsimshian, it's amongst themselves. They are now fighting amongst themselves. 1991 is coming and further hardships are ahead for those people. And if they don't prepare properly for it, and they don't have much time. Time is running out on them. I feel very bad for them because 1991 is approaching very fast, and the things that will take place and will happen then could hurt them dearly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Just for the record, you said that you were a counselor back in the days when Tribal Council had to consider whether or not to enter ANCSA, and I believe you served recently as mayor as well.
Yes.
This gentleman is next.
The 13th region, for the record.
13th region, and not the 14th.
I'd like to ask Casey one question before I get started here. You mentioned $25,000. What was that referring to?
That was a direct payment to the recipients, sure. The participants of the Kassan shareholders. They've made, I believe, they're working on their third major payment to their shareholders.
It's something new to me. I've never heard that anybody got $25,000, not anywhere near my like island. Ketchikan, they didn't get any $25,000 as shareholder. They did not. Okay. Now,
could we have your name just at the start, sir?
Russell Hayward.
Thank you.
I was secretary right in the middle of this whole upshot of the whole bit. I was secretary of the committee for 24 years. I was in there in 1970, 71, 72. I was there to cover the whole transition of one position to another until we came out without joining the land claims. Now, what they told us Solomon Guthrie and I and Ira and Walter Wesley, we went down there to Washington, D.C. We went down there a little earlier, and they told us this. If you're going to join land claims, you're going to lose your fishing rights, which includes the traps, like somebody mentioned. You lose your medical service, health clinic service you won't have, education funding of any kind, including higher education, cultural education, will be out. You won't have it. You're going to generate your own if you're going to join land claims. This is what they told the people in Malacala, the representatives of the council here then.
It was BIA told them that?
The people in Washington, D.C., the BIA. Ted Stevens and all the senators and the representatives that were in office then. They were the ones that gave us the lowdown. Now, we returned to Washington another year, a few months later, and this time that I'm talking about, we fought for the rights of the Tsimsheans living outside of Malacala. We asked that they include the Tsimsheans that are not here, not members of the community. And they finally wrote more on the act to include all Tsimsheans that are not members of the community. That's what the way the thing reads. That's just the way it reads. Now, we went back down there again, and we wanted to... Now, this Ted Stevens, I want to mention this man, Ted Stevens. I was there twice, and I know the man. He was the one that said, Rustin, his lawyer, rather, and him were saying, maybe you folks can come in the back door. We were taking a picture like this. We were taking a good look and say, okay, we've got our land already. We're not asking for land. We want to retain the reservation of an island, but we also want rights to the land claims so that we can obtain some money for our children, for their education, what have you, to buy houses and this and that. We want to know. We went down there again and gave them the track of thinking that maybe we can retain that island, no question that it will be taken away from us, because it's already established by Congress that we have the island, the fishing rights. And when we went back there, Ted Stevens said, I didn't say that. We couldn't find his lawyer then. It was a good year and a half after the first trip. But they denied that there was a backdoor opening in any way to change the law, to add another line that says Malacala, who has already received land and is proclaimed by Congress that they own the land or that they have the rights to the land. Proclaimed by Congress that there are 3,000 feet of fishing rights to the island there, will be retained. Now, that's the picture they told us earlier. When we went back down there, they said they denied it. But here again, the mere fact that they told us everything will go out the window, you won't have any rights to your reservation. Other people will join you and they'll run the reservation for you. It'll be wide open. So many years, well, many years was it there? They said 1991. Now all your fishing rights will be gone. Your medical rights, any services from the federal government, you won't have. You're going to generate your own if you're going to be in land claims. Now, some people have mentioned a while ago about what's hurting us as a tribe since land claims came into view. There's another thing I want to bear out at this moment here, and that is our relatives, our blood relations that are away from Malacala are not getting any benefits from the community here. They're not legally members, because 2 years after you leave Malacala without retaining your right to be a member, you've lost it. So these people went and joined land claims. They had a perfect right to do so. Now, the picture is this. These people cannot come back to Malacala. Now, this is not in the act. It's made by the council here. And I was one, some of you people that are members of the council then will remember that I stood up against lawyer Perla, attorney Perla, I don't think this is right. You cannot, blood is thicker than water. You cannot say, look, you pass some San member here, you can't come back to Malacala. You're not going to be able to do it. I don't think it's right. Morally, it isn't. That's what I would try to tell them. Some of us thought the same way, but the overwhelming majority of the council said, no, we're going to keep those people out, because Pirtle said so. He's going to write the law that way. I don't believe, I mean, I'm saying this. As a Simsian, living in Fairbanks, what have you, Sitka, Anchorage, and you have roots here in Malacala. You cannot come back and enjoy anything in Malacala. You're not, you don't have the right anymore. That's from the council's, and the council also made a law not long ago. I think Casey will remember that this law has already been expended, that says you have a right to give up your membership to land claims and be retained as a return to Malacala as a Malacala Indian community member. That law has already passed, right? That 2 years or how many years was it?
Two years.
2 years, Russell, but that bill that you're talking about really was misleading, because that bill really didn't mean it. As I understand it, Russell, that our former members still can apply for membership in the community, and it's up to the council to decide whether they're going to allow participants of the Land Claim Settlement Act to return to the community and reap the benefits of both the Land Claim Settlement Act and the benefits of being a member of the Metlakatla Indian community. That's the decision that the council has to make.
In each case.
Yeah. Anyway, Richard Benson was the mayor here at those years that everything, was that right, Ira?
Right.
Richie was the mayor here. And then I think Solomon came on soon after that.
Came before.
And then Solomon Richard. Atkinson.
Before.
You came before Richard, yeah. But anyway.
Before and after.
Yeah. My own moral view, this is strictly a person that has grown up to see so many things in Malacala that were good, some things that were wrong trying to come into Malacala in my age, my beginning of life. My moral feeling is that I go away to New York, I join a corporation, okay, I made my millions. Why should I be denied to come back to Malacala? Because I made $1 million on my own business track, whatever you'll call it. I wanted to make money somewhere, and I succeed in doing something and return to Malacala. Malacala, I want to live here. This is my own country. Now, that's my own moral feeling. That's absolutely my own. I don't think anybody, I'm not saying that people should say so, saying we or any other, but we're denying our blood relations. I'm coming back to Malacala. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Guthrie?
Now, I would like to say a few words. I was involved in the, I was a councilman for, I think, 34 years, or 30 years, and 4 years as mayor. So you can tell my age by now, yes, how old. I've served in the community for a good many years. And it was mentioned here by different ones that we were right in the middle of it when the land claims came out, and we were told that what was brought up, if we joined the land claims, we would lose our reservation here. And the council, it was, I hate to kind of repeat this again, it was mentioned by somebody here that it was the idea why we didn't join the land claims. But my feeling is on the land claims, it sounds like the Simsians are kind of shoved aside, the way I see it. See the Tlingits and the Haidas. They claim this coast here. That's their Aboriginal rights, the different areas here. And we feel the same way, the Simsians. our rights, as mentioned by Mr. Booth here, our domain here is right in the southeastern Alaska and Canada. Now, our ancestors were around, their main area was around northern Canada. And when we were over there, our ancestors were in Canada, when the missionary came into the picture, Mr. William Duncan, he came amongst our group. And at first, our ancestors were in Fort Simpson, which is Port Simpson now. They were Christianized in Fort Simpson. And then they moved, the converts moved from Fort Simpson to Metlakatla, British Columbia. And they decided to settle there in Metlakatla, British Columbia. And they asked England for land to own. They want the title of this area in Metlakatla, British Columbia. And the British government said that Indians can't own land. That's what we were told. Our ancestors were told that. So they were really unhappy about it, and they did not know what to do until later on. Then they decided to move away from Metlakatla, British Columbia, and settle here on an island. It's kind of a long history. I'm kind of shortening the history when our ancestors migrated from Canada to an island, and that's when they started this colony here. It wasn't very easy. It was kind of a miserable life. My mother used to tell me how miserable it is when they moved across. Now, what I'm trying to bring out to you is we have the rights. The Simpsons' rights is split right in half. The United States took half of our area, and the British government took the other half. Now, what do we have? We feel that we are entitled to that land. That's why I'm asking that question when you brought up the Eskimo, the Canadian group. Now, they're probably in the same shoes we're in. They have they roam around that area, both across the border there, the Canadian border and Alaska border. And I'm kind of anxious to find out what is the status now of the Eskimos that you're talking about. Are they in the same position as we are here? They're both areas. They would roam those areas, and that's how they settled the land claims with the Clinkers and Haidas. They didn't have any big metropolis here or a big city, but they roamed the area. That's where they make their living. That's why they were allowed to get in on this land claim settlement act. So I feel that we have a long ways to go yet to settle this land claim act. And I'm kind of anxious to find out, and I understand the Canadians, they are still pushing for land claims. Maybe you may brief us on that too. Yeah. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. Well, I suppose that I
don't want to make this long, but there are some similarities in the situation of the Eskimos to the situation of the Simpson. The Inupiat Eskimos, who live on the Arctic coast, and they go from Point Hope right along the Arctic coast, along the Arctic coast of Canada, and right over to Greenland, and they are people who speak the same language. Well, they have families on both sides of the Alaska-Canada border, and the Athabascans are in the same situation, because there are many Athabascans living in Alaska, and of course many Athabascans live right across the border in Canada. And in fact, some of the work I did in Canada for the government of Canada in the 1970s related to the porcupine caribou herd, which is a caribou herd that crosses between Canada and Alaska. The caribou don't know there's a boundary there. They keep going back and forth. And so the people on both sides are interested in preserving that herd, and we had to make recommendations to both Canada and the USA for the preservation of that herd. But the Athabascans and the Inupiat in Alaska, their claims were recognized in 1971. In Canada, the Inupiat have reached an agreement in principle with the government of Canada, and the Athabascans in the Yukon Territory, have reached an agreement in principle with the government of Canada. And they are getting land, and they are getting certain hunting and fishing rights, and certain exclusive rights to take certain species. It's a complicated agreement, but they have studied the Alaska land claim settlement, and they've tried to make improvements on it. But there are people all along the border who are whose territory was divided by the European countries, by England and by Russia, and then by the United States when it succeeded to Russia's claims here, and by Canada when it succeeded to England's claims. So the Haida, the Tsimshian, the Athabascans, and the Inupiat all had their territory cut down the middle by these borders established by the Europeans. Yes, Mr. Patterson.